Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I'm joined today by a longtime guest. It's been a long time since he's been on. It's Yusei Koshal. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well, man. Excited to be back on here. I know there's nothing better to do than sit inside because I'm quarantined here in Illinois. So as soon as you texted me saying, hey, do you want to be on the pod? I was like, yep, I'll be on as soon as I can, man.
Yep, so there's not really much else to do these days other than podcasts. I wanted to get one more podcast out. Technically, I guess this is still a week. I know we weren't as great with podcasts this week, only got one out. We are going to try to do every day this week, Monday through Friday, so keep an eye out for those as well. And probably on Saturday, next Saturday, Matt Vladivinos joined me a few weeks back to talk about offensive line draft prospects. So check that out next Saturday as well. So keep an eye out for that. But you said, let's just get right into it. The Bears made several moves this offseason. If you had to give the Chicago Bears an offseason grade between A and F, what would you give them?
So I would say I'm right there kind of in the middle at a C or a B minus, really. I think a B is maybe too generous. And the Bears fan in me getting in the way. But the reason I say a C is just because you look at some of the signings they had, like, all right, Jimmy Graham's one example. And it's like, okay, well, who is Ryan Pace, the general manager, bidding against there? But then you also look at some of the other moves that they had, like the trade for Nick Foles, and you're like, okay, that's a move that a lot of people are kind of trashing right now. But when you look at it, it could really be one of the most underrated moves of just the NFL offseason in general, if it pays off.
Right. Yeah, let's start with Foles, because I think that is a really interesting case study. I wrote an article for Overtime Heroics yesterday about Foles. I sat down with some Game Pass and went through and watched Nick Foles' games last year. I think he got a raw deal in Jacksonville. That's my take on Nick Foles. He looked good. He isn't the best, deep ball passer in the world anymore. He really struggled throwing deep, but he moved the Jaguars' offense against the Colts. He played pretty well in the games he played in. And I would argue that most of the reasons for his turnovers and sacks were the fact that he didn't really have offensive line protection and he didn't really have any weapons. Now, I was more hopeful on the Bears. I obviously during the season wasn't able to track them as closely. I, for some reason, have thought their offensive line was pretty good this season. I went back, watched some tape. That is not the case, you say. And they haven't really made any moves to improve that offensive line outside of Iafetti, and I'm not even sure he's a guy that immediately improves. What is the most important position to tackle to make that offensive line better? Because it was a huge weakness last year, although I would agree, I would argue as well, that it's a hard line to argue, I guess, is my overall point, because Mitch Trubisky took 38 sacks last year. I would argue that sacks are a quarterback stat. You can blame sacks on quarterbacks. And there were certainly, in some of the games I watched yesterday, some sacks where you could blame it on Mitch Trubisky. But there were quite a few as well where the offensive line just allowed pressure far too quickly. What do you think about the Bears' offensive line situation and how they can kind of fix that?
So the offensive line situation right now, it's kind of a question mark heading into 2020 even still, because if you go from the left to the right, you've got Charles Leno, James Daniels, Cody Whitehair. Those three are going to be starters in 2020 because they were starters in 2019. And also, might I point out that part of the reason that the offensive line struggled in 2019 was because they had James Daniels playing center for the first half of the season, and then Cody Whitehair playing right guard. Now, traditionally, in 2018, when this was one of the more underrated offensive line units in the NFL, it was never elite by any means, but those same three guys, Whitehair, Leno, Daniels, the deal was that Daniels was the left guard, and White here was the center. Now, if you look at the right side of the line, you were used to seeing Kyle Long and Bobby Massey, and that's the way it was since basically 2016. However, Long went down with an injury, and Bears fans know Kyle Long because he's a name that's been like a staple on that offensive line, even throughout the Mark Trestman, the John Fox years, right? The deal with Long is he got hurt, and now they put him on injured reserve in like week 6 or 7, I think, in 2019. He's gone, so you have that void. And I think right now the Bears are relying on Alex Barr's Rashard Coward or Jermaine Ifedi to be one of the three that potentially ends up filling that role. But I still don't think Coward was too inconsistent in 2019. Bars, he played like a couple snaps, but just nowhere near enough to see what he can really be. The sample size for him was just too small. And then Ifedi, obviously, like, this is a guy that started, I think, 60 games in Seattle over a four-year period as a former first-round pick. But it kind of, you know, makes you question even him. Just the fact that if he was really as good as the 60 starts that he had, why is he not, you know, why has he signed a big contract extension in Seattle? So he's kind of a reclamation project. So right now, right guard, the Bears just don't have an answer or a clear-cut answer, and that's the position they're going to have to attack going into free agency. Or as the second wave of free agency continues, the third wave even, and then the NFL draft, obviously.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Bears do, especially in the draft, is if they don't have currently a first-round pick. And obviously that's kind of a hole for them within this draft. And I'd imagine they have to go after offensive line fairly early in the second round. I've seen a lot of people like you mock this Ezra Cleveland character to them. I don't know a ton about Cleveland or draft prospects in general, as I often say. But if they could add some help in the draft, I think that would much improve this offensive line. That being said, Nick Foles is okay at escaping pressure. I would say Mitch Trubisky has better escapability than Nick Foles does. But the part about Chicago that kind of excites me is maybe you don't need to protect Nick Foles at one, because what he excels in is the mid-range game, if that makes sense, is kind of throwing these posts and slant routes down the middle of the field and through zone coverage. That is where Nick Foles, I believe, is at his best. And that, to me, is a system that the Bears can run with Matt Nagy and be very successful, especially with big targets like Allen Robinson, who I truly believe is a better quarterback than Mitchell Trubisky away from being an all-pro type character. And perhaps it's we finally see Anthony Miller, who from the time you began coming on this podcast, you said, you have been hyping up Anthony Miller since he got drafted. And maybe this finally, with a better quarterback in the picture, maybe finally he takes a step forward. There were brief flashes from Riley Ridley. You can't count on that, though. He wasn't the greatest, but he did show flashes, had some big plays occasionally. But I think the wide receiver position is overall a lot better off for the Bears than it is for the Jaguars, and I think Nick Foles can have success there.
Yeah, so, you know, looking at Nick Foles, I mean – but before, you know what, before I get into Foles, I think it's important to understand kind of the timeline and how things went in terms of who was going to be the Bears quarterback. I mean, I know you were someone that was like, it's going to be Andy Dalton. Dalton, I know for a fact, was a legit possibility for them. And then there were rumors that came out in like late January, mid-February, saying, oh, what about Derek Carr, Cam Newton? And then obviously Foles was always the wild card. And we got our answer when they traded the fourth round pick for Nick Foles. Now, I will say this, is that three of the four names that were being floated around the Bears, if you look at the head or the coaching staff that they've also developed, three of the four, right? Dalton, Foles, Carr, DeFilippo, Nagy, and Lazor, the head coach, quarterbacks coach, and offensive coordinator. Each of those have worked with, you know, the three quarterbacks that I just mentioned. And so Foles made sense, not just from the perspective that he had already played in this scheme in two separate stops in Philadelphia and Kansas City, but also because he's worked with DeFilippo, who was his quarterback's coach the year that they won the Super Bowl. He's worked with Bill Lazor, too, because Lazor was his quarterback's coach, I believe, when he was a rookie in Philadelphia under Chip Kelly. And then obviously, Nagy, the familiarity from Kansas City. So this is a move that, like, you look at, you're like, okay, so they didn't make this move because they made this move because he was the best possible fit, not because he was the only guy that was on the quarterback market.
Oh, certainly not. I don't believe that for a second, obviously. Obviously, you have to take into consideration your coaching staff and things like that. I just want to be clear. I never say anything like that. But I do think you're right. Like, he's an excellent fit there. Now, DeFilippo, is he going to be the offensive coordinator in Chicago?
So he's going to be the quarterbacks coach. I know that
okay,
last
that's good.
Season,
he because he did struggle as the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville. Yeah, I think.
You know, and he was with Minnesota in 2007 or 2018 as their offensive coordinator. I believe he was their offensive coordinator there. He also struggled there, and I think he was fired like halfway through the season or something. But the point is the fact that like DeFilippo is someone that's going to be in the he's going to he's strictly the quarterback's coach, and then Bill Lazor, the offensive coordinator, they brought him in to kind of simplify the offense down for Trubisky. So it's really, I mean, last year it was kicker that dominated the headlines in Chicago during the offseason. This year it's going to be quarterback. And this is just a really intriguing move because a lot of people right now, I think, are underrating Foles to Chicago. You know, the thing is, I think that when you compare, like, the situation in Jacksonville that he had to, like, what he's going to be walking into in Chicago in terms of playmaker and experienced coaches, I would definitely give the 2020 Bears the upper nod over the 2019 Jets.
Yeah, I would ask this question to you, reading between the tea leaves of what you are kind of saying here. Do you really believe this is going to be a quarterback competition? Because from where I sit, I think there is no way you can hand Mitch Trubisky the keys to the starting offense again. I think you have to roll with Foles simply because of his cost and the draft pick that he cost you. You cannot sit Nick Foles as a backup.
They're going to have to battle it out in camp. And here's the thing, look, the reason it's going to be a true quarterback competition is – first off, $20 million that Foles is getting is too expensive for a backup. I agree there, but the reason it's going to be a legitimate quarterback competition is because if you try out Nick Foles in Week 1 of 2020, you know what? That's going to be saying that's basically going to be the general manager Ryan Pace, the head coach Matt Nagy, giving up on Trubisky is what essentially would be. And we've heard stories in the past of like Nagy bringing in Trubisky to Kansas City for like an 8-hour visit or something. You know, during the 2017 pre-draft process, and them just coming away super impressed and whatnot. So the point is the fact like Pace was Trubisky's pick, but Nagy took this job knowing that Trubisky was going to be his quarterback, and he was going to have to turn him into that franchise type guy. And now you bring in Nick Foles because you want some legitimate competition. So it's just hard to know who's going to be the starter right now, but I think they're going to roll out Trubisky in Week 1. And then if he kind of, you know, does what he did in 2019, then it's going to be Nick Foles the rest of the way. And I think right now what the Bears are also banking on is the defense that they upgraded the pass rush position. The defense is going to have 8 of 11 starters back. They're banking on the defense kind of holding down the fort again while, like, Trubisky gets used to Lazor and DeFilippo, like, in the game.
I'm just going to push back on that. Their defense, yes, that's a great point. They got a ton better on defense. I actually think they have one of the better defenses in the league at this point if you don't look at that strong safety position, which I think letting Clinton Dix was a walk was a mistake personally. But I just don't know how they can roll out Mitch Trubisky as their starter in 2020, unless he really blows the doors off the preseason. Like, even if he's average in the preseason, I think you have to go with Foles because Foles has been the better passer throughout his entire career.
Yeah, so Foles definitely gets the, you know, just personally me, is I think that Foles gets the upper nod. The reason being is because He's been
well,
there.
Well, you just hold on. You just said you think Mitch Trubisky starts in week one.
So speaking from the Bears' perspective, right? Like, if I was the GM Pace right now, I would honestly have to roll out Trubisky because if I don't.
But why? Because I disagree. You, because if you really roll out Mitch Trubisky at that point, you're gonna lose your job. You said because people.
If the Bears ownership, right, if they were going to lose first off, they think very highly of Pace, right? And they've said that, okay, well, we were at the season-ending press conference. They're like, look, we're going to be 12 and we're coming off like we're 12 and 4 two seasons ago, and we're 8-8, and Pace is right. We regressed in a lot of different areas, right? Which, again, if you look at the Bears' like offense in 2019, not every issue was like, or not every problem that existed per se was Trubisky's fault, but a majority of it was his, because if you're number 12, if you're selected number 12 overall, you should be a franchise quarterback going into year 4, right? Now, the thing is that they're going to roll out Trubisky simply because Trubisky was Pace's pick. But personally, for me, like, the fan in me, I would want to see Foles out there just because I know, like, he would be the security blanket and offer you a lot more security on offense.
You truly believe that if Nick Foles outperforms Mitch Trubisky in the preseason, Ryan Pace is going to still start Mitch Trubisky?
That's what can happen, yeah, because Pace is tied to Trubisky, so.
I think that's – well, that's a surefire – to me, if that happens, that's a surefire sign that everyone, Nagy, Pace, is gone by midseason. And I say that with 100% confidence because you cannot roll out Mitch Trubisky in year 4 if he looks inferior in the preseason to Nick Foles. And then if he's looked inferior in the preseason, I'm assuming he's not going to do well in the regular season. And then if you have to bench Mitch Trubisky for Nick Foles in week 4, that to me, that's when Ryan Pace loses his job. So why would, I guess what I'm saying is I get what you're saying. I get that he's tied to Mitch Trubisky, but I think he might swallow his pride and say, hey, I want to save my job and show that I made the smart move and I will start Nick Foles. And if Nick Foles doesn't work out, then I'll move to Mitch Trubisky.
See, here's the thing. It could really go either way, right? But, like, Pace, traditionally, he's just been known as a guy that's – he's established this reputation of being someone that's always going to stick with his guys, right? Which, again, that there is some good in that. But then, again, the issue with it is the fact that you don't know when – it's like beating a dead horse, right? Pace, he consistently kind of sticks to his guys. And then as a result of it, what it does is, you know, kind of certain times it's come back to life. Like, for an example, the tight end position in 2000, and I think it was 2017 or 18 when he signed Deion Sims, right? His goal was he kind of stuck with Sims a year too much longer than he should have. And as a result, right, it like came back to bite him. And I believe that they cut Sims, or Pace finally cut Sims in during the 2019 offseason, right? So the thing is the fact that Pace is just, I know for a fact, he's going to stick to his guns. Unless, like, he's going through some complete, like, change of heart this offseason.
Well, I would just say if – and I trust your insight on Bears management, but he's going to get fired if that's the plan. Like, wouldn't you agree? If he rolls out Mitch Trubisky week one and Mitch Trubisky struggles, which Mitch Trubisky has not shown us otherwise that he won't struggle, even if Mitch Trubisky is average – he is, if they do not go better than I would say 10-6 and the quarterback is terrible and a real issue again, everyone's gone. Would you agree with that?
So he's first off, right? He's already on the hot seat just going into 2020, you know.
I guess I don't know. You don't think he'll change up his strategy to save his job? I just find that hard to believe that a GM, if Nick Foles outplays Mitch Trubisky in the preseason, is going to say, I will risk my job to stick with my guy. And then your guy, if he fails in the preseason and you still stick with him, to me, that's a death sentence.
Yeah, so Pace is already, like I said, on the hot seat just going into 2020, you know, because he basically, like right now, he's in win-now mode, right? And you look at some of the moves he's making. like Robert Quinn, for example, he's trying to, you know, like the Quinn signing, the Graham signing, he's doing whatever he can to save his job, right? And ultimately, like, that's what he did with the Foles signing. So the point is the fact that, like, he's already on the hot seat, and unless the team, like, makes the playoffs in 2020, you know, or, like, wins the Super Bowl, for example, because the Bears ownership has kind of been known for doing this, for saying, hey, look, you have to get to, like, the NFC Championship game, for example. They did it with Lovie Smith back in 2012, I think. They're like, hey, it's NFC Championship game or bust. It's the same mantra for Pace this year, you know. And the reason I think that – I know you're talking about, like, Pace and Nagy being fired midseason. The deal is that the Bears ownership, they had an opportunity to fire Trustman midseason. They did not. They could have fired Fox midseason on two separate occasions in 2016 and 2017, and they didn't do so. So the point is the fact that, like, they're just going to stick with Pace and Nagy until the end.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a possibility. I'm just saying that Matt Nagy, if he wants to save his job, if Nick Foles, no, I guess I kind of disagree with your thought that they will stick with Trubisky even if Nick Foles outperforms him in the preseason, because I would argue no NFL franchise performs like that. No NFL franchise looks at a two-player competition, and if the better guy wins, says, oh, we're going to stick with the guy because we chose him. And if that happens, that's a bad organization, I would argue, because you're not at that point, you're not picking talent, you're just playing politics, which is not the way to run a franchise. You see that with the Bengals, and it's why the Bengals haven't been successful forever.
Yeah, so this is why, like, so I'm going to take kind of kick the door back to November here and just some of the stuff that I know regarding you know, the Bears, like, quarterback competition, kind of what the outlook was going to be this offseason. I heard from someone, right, that it was going to be, like, Nagy was going to get the pick of who would be, like, the next quarterback for this team, whether it was going to be in 2020 or 2021. Now, they committed to Pace and Nagy through at least 2021 contract-wise, but obviously, like, if they flame out in 2020, then they're both going to on. There's going to be a new regime this year, next time in Chicago if they miss the playoffs, right? So this, like, this Foles pick, right? Personally, Pace would trot out Trubisky every single time, just because, again, that's his guy, and he's always talked about just, like, sticking with your guys and conviction and whatnot. But, like, Nagy, personally, I think if he has the final say in all this, as well as DeFilippo and Lazar, who were Nagy's hires, by the way, then they're going to go out and decide that, like, no, this is – we want the veteran starting from, you know, this point in the season. But, like, what it is this, is I think what it's going to come down to –
So, hold on. You've painted two conflicting pictures here. Are you saying who has the control here?
Pace. Pace is the final guy, right, that, like, has a say of football operations in Chicago.
So you think that – Pace overrules Nagy, so no matter what, Trubisky starts.
Trubisky starts the season, but he's on a short leash.
I don't know. I feel like you might have the roles flipped a little bit. I feel like Matt Nagy has been there shorter and has a little bit more power than you're given credit for. But I don't know the inner workings of the Bears super well, but I just feel like at some point, you trust your head coach more than your GM, who hasn't really pulled much off other than getting Khalil Mack, who is now sitting on a team that is threatening to not make the playoffs, and you've lost your draft picks for the foreseeable future. So I just feel like Nagy, personally, I feel like Nagy has more control there. But that's enough Bears talk for today. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Let's move to off-season talk. You pay attention to the NFL as a whole. What is one move that has really interested you this off-season?
So, yeah, it would be some of the moves that the New Giants made, just because, like, I mean, he kind of admitted, he was like, oh yeah, you know, I messed up between like trying to win now and trying to rebuild this team. And then he goes out and he signs like James Bradberry and Blake Martinez in free agency to big contracts, and then he adds on guys like Cameron Fleming, Levine Toledo, Deion Lewis, the running back. So those are some moves that I've been really interested in, because it's like, okay, what's the true direction of this franchise of the Giants? Are they trying to legitimately build around Danny Jones, which is obviously the end goal, or are they basically saying, hey, look, like, we're still in win now mode with the Bradberry and Martinez signings?
I don't think they're in win now mode by any way, and I would argue both signings obviously don't make a ton of sense, but you did have to plug up some holes basically on the defensive side, and that is what they went after. They went after the defense. And to me, this kind of signals a weird David Gettleman-esque shift that I think he's – I know a lot of people think they're going to go Isaiah Simmons with their pick, and that certainly wouldn't surprise me. I love Isaiah Simmons, and he makes all the sense in the world, but – Dave Gettleman is just not a predictable GM. I think they're going to go offense in the first round, to be completely honest with you. I think they're going to try to get a tackle, another tackle, or a wide receiver early to kind of up that passing game just a little bit more. And I do not think the Giants are that far away on offense, if we're being completely honest. I think they have a good wide receiving core. Darius Slayton jumped off the stat sheet last season, especially during the end of the year. He was awesome for them. Obviously, you're looking at and hoping that Saquon Barkley has a bounce back season. But Slayton, who's kind of their number two wide receiver right now, was awesome last year. He had 740 yards and 8 touchdowns, and obviously you have Golden Tate as well. The Giants have some real talent on offense, I think, not to mention, of course, Evan Engram. I look at the Giants personally as a team that they are like probably another offseason away from getting to the playoffs. I don't think that David Gettleman is going to oversee it. I think the way it's going to go is they'll even out this year a bit and probably go between 7-9 and 8-8. And next year they'll have a new GM in charge. And I think that may look a lot like Joe Judge, depending on how Joe Judge does in year one. But I think the Giants have received some unnecessary flack. Yes, they're not set in stone with a plan necessarily, but I think they have a solid offense, and they are looking to fill the holes on a terrible defense. And I think that's what they've kind of done thus far in free agency.
Yeah, so they do have, you know, you mentioned the solid offensive core, and I think that they do need to have like another just infusion of talent. In terms of like getting good talent the offseason, you mentioned wide receiver, because like that's Darius Slayton's room right now. Then Golden Tate's the older bet there. Sterling Shepard, obviously, like, he's always just been a lower end number two guy to me. So they need to find someone in case like Shepard goes down or Tate's injured. The offense, they've got solid. I would say that they do need to – there's going to be a bit of a competition at right tackle for the Giants, because you're not sure if Nick Gates or rookie's going to start. And then we look at the defense. They have a really solid front seven. And Dave Gettleman's always been known as someone that's going to build his defenses through the front seven. I mean, he invested heavily in the defense in Carolina, and guys like Mario Addison, Star Lutalili, Dentari Poe was there for some time, brought back Julius Peppers as well. So you look at the Bradberry signing. That's a three-year thing on paper. It was really a two-year thing, right? Two-year contract. They can move on from him in 2022 and save like $22 million. Blake Martinez, the coordinator now, Patrick Graham, was Martinez's inside linebackers in 18. And so landings that he's made on defense, like with Bradbury, is because of familiarity from Carolina. And then Martinez because of the defensive coordinator. So the Giants overall, they're a team right now that, like, the arrow's pointing up. But if they have a solid offseason and they can find – they're going to get an impact player at number four overall regardless, right? So if they can get an offensive tackle, and I think a guy like Simmons or game changer – then they're really going to be in business in 2020. I don't expect them to win a lot of games, but they're going to be in business in the sense that they're going to be an exciting young team to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I would 100% agree. I think they are basically a first-round selection away from threatening to be a 9-7 team. They're on the right side. I like Daniel Jones a lot. I know he's not a talented deep ball thrower. I know he's kind of a game manager. But if you can make that offense work around him and Saquon Barkley, and you can use Saquon Barkley more effectively this year, then I think they're set. Any other
– Yeah, you know, so I've said this, you know, just regarding points. I still think Saquon's obviously the best player on the team right now. And it's going to be that way for a long time. I think that as Joe Judge builds his relationship with Daniel Jones, Jason Garrett builds his relationship with Daniel Jones because Garrett's offensive coordinator there now. While Danny Dimes is taking time to get adjusted into a new system, they're going to kind of rely heavily on guys like Saquon Barkley and Evan Ingram to carry the load.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Giants do this offseason, obviously. Your sleeper kind of team that has picked up maybe more pieces than a lot of people have noticed this offseason.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting one because there's a lot of teams that I could look at and say these are the teams, right? But I think these are like the couple of sleeper teams because really in the NFL sometimes all it takes is like one big move or a couple of smaller moves to put a team on the radar. Now, I think for me personally, the sleeper team this year that a lot of people are not paying enough attention to is the Denver Broncos. They got Grant Blasco in free agency, right? And you're adding someone that's going into his fifth season to an already solid offense. They got Melvin Gordon too, which is just going to be another asset for the quarterback Drew Lock. They also brought back Shelby Harris on a really cheap deal. And the defensive tackle is so important in Vic Fangio's offense. I truly believe that team, the Broncos, if they can just find the right inside linebacker, then it could really be one of the intriguing teams in the NFL because they're set on the outside. On defense, they're set on the outside with pass rush. I know they lost the longtime cornerstone in Derek Wolfe to Baltimore Ravens, but still, that's a team that can legitimately push someone like the Raiders, for example, in the AFC West. Granted, Kansas City is obviously going to have the upper hand because of guys like Chris Jones, Tyreek Hill, Pat Mahomes. But Denver could really make a serious run at a wild card spot this year.
I am cautiously optimistic about the Broncos. I still don't know if I 100% buy Drew Lock. I've been watching a little bit more Drew Lock lately. I still don't think there's a big enough sample size to say he's the guy, personally. I would not be mad at all if John Elway found a way to get Cam Newton into Denver on a $10 million deal. I think that'd be a savvy move to work on. They still have big questions at offensive tackle, I think. They have a massive hole at the second cornerback position. If they think Isaac Yiadom or Devontae Bosby is going to be a passable starting NFL cornerback, they're just wrong, flat out dead wrong. But other than that, they have a solid defense. I'll be really interested to see what they do in the draft, personally. I don't think they've done quite enough to be a sleeper team yet. I think if they ever grab the guy like, say, a Henry Ruggs or a Jerry Jeudy, then that completely changes the offense. I personally think the offense right now is fine. I think Deshaun Hamilton showed enough flashes when Drew Locke was in the game. He had one bad drop, but really that was it. And, I mean, you have I'm forgetting his name. Tim Parker, I want to say. I feel so bad for forgetting his name. He is a former Utah wideout as well.
So while we're looking that name up, let me just
Tim Patrick,
say,
Tim Patrick, who I think was awesome last year in his appearances. Yes, they probably need another guy. Do I think they have to draft him in the first round? No, I think you could get a guy like Brandon Ayuk in the second round. My dream scenario, you say, for the Broncos is one of those tackles that everyone loves falls to them and they take a tackle to replace Garrett Bowles. Or, like, things get super crazy and Isaiah Simmons is somehow there at 15 and suddenly you draft Isaiah Simmons and you have, like, the most devastatingly good defense in the NFL by far. So
yeah, you know, the deal is this, right, is I think, like, my ideal scenario for the Broncos would be I would put offensive tackle because they need to address, like, Garrett Bowles was a complete failure pick, right? No one's doubting that. I think that
– Well, I would push back on that a bit. He made massive steps forward down the stretch in 2019. You saw Garrett Bowles at his worst against the Bears. That was his worst game of the season. It got better from there. Like, he got a little bit better, and I think the plan in Denver is to trust Mike Munchak, their offensive line coach, a little bit. Renowned as one of the best offensive line coaches in the league. I do agree that a tackle would be good, but if they go into next season with Garrett Bowles at tackle, I am not as worried as some people are.
You know, so for me, it's just like, maybe you could always, if you roll with Bowles, right, you're basically just banking on him kind of having a big turnaround or finally figuring out, like, who he is as a player in 2020. Now, granted, I will say this, though. If a guy like Wirfs, for example, or Andrew Thomas, or Jedrick Wills is there, then you have to pull the trigger, right? Because you need to continue to protect the quarterback. And some of the best linemen that come out, you tend to do find them in the NFL draft, right? But I will say this, that if you don't go lineman in round one and you decide, oh, we want a dynamic game changer to, you know, give Drew Locke another weapon, then you can go ahead and you can say, you know what, let's go with Judy or Ruggs or CeeDee Lamb, because those are going to be the first three taken off the board. And then I think that in the second round, you still will have a shot at someone like KJ Hamler or Brandon Ayuk or Jalen Reagor from TCU, unless he, like, skyrockets up draft boards through these, like, virtual FaceTime meetings that every team around the NFL just seems to be conducting now. So the point is the fact that, like, for Denver, you could go offensive tackle, then wide receiver, or you could go wide receiver, then offensive tackle. I don't really think, like, it's going to make a difference, because in the second round, you are going to find players like Josh Jones, the offensive tackle from Houston, for example, that in any other NFL draft would be gone in the first round, but because of all the run that's going to happen and the shakeup because of the quarterbacks, you are going to see guys slip, and you're going to get impact day one starters.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go about the draft, and it'll be interesting to see how that gets attacked. A quick look at the NFC North before we leave here. I'm going to throw out a statement. If Nick Foles starts, and this is if Nick Foles starts, the Bears should be considered the favorites to win the NFC North.
Yes and no, and I'll tell you why, because I've gotten into this crazy habit of just presenting both sides of an argument whenever I'm on, like, any podcast. It's going to be yes if they figure out the right guard position, if Anthony Miller finally takes the next step, and if whoever's starting at tight end is healthy, and if they can get the running game going. Because let's be real, last year with the Bears playmakers, the only consistent one all season was Allen Robinson. Miller regressed massively, so I know I've hyped him up, but he's put up or shut up time for Miller in 2020. Because if you look at some of the moments that he had in 2019, he didn't score his first touchdown until like week 14. That's number one. And then number two, you know, there were times where he was running the wrong routes, which cost them like interceptions and good field position and whatnot. Running game, David Montgomery's was supposed to, they hyped David Montgomery up all offseason. Fans were so excited for him in 2019. He was good, but he wasn't like, you know, wasn't great. And they did about to get Montgomery. Tight end, just because when you look at Philly and Kansas City that run similar offenses to the Bears, tight end's like a focal position. They had like between, I think, eight players in 2019, they had like 46 receptions total at the tight end position. And that's starting eight different guys. And then, you know, the offensive line, if Foles, I think, performs well under pressure, he's proven he can. But still, a solid line is always a necessity. And then you look on defense, Khalil Mack played 2019 with, you know, back and neck injuries. If he returns healthy, there's no doubt it's going to be one of the best units in the NFL, especially going into year two under Chuck Pagano, where I do expect growth from guys like Bilal Nichols. If all that stuff goes down, what I just said, they're favorites to win the North. But if the offense continues to struggle out of the gate, regardless of who the quarterback is, if the only consistent guy is Allen Robinson, then the Bears will be second to the Packers again because it's all going to come down to quarterback play.
I just feel like I can't defend the Packers anymore. What they have done this offseason is truly unacceptable. Like, you saw last year the start of a decline for Aaron Rodgers. And the window, I think, is the next 2 years. And I think Aaron Rodgers is going to play a lot longer than 2 years, but he's not going to be the Aaron Rodgers we've known for so long as one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Last year, I would argue he was barely a top 10 quarterback. And maybe he has one more year of being a top 10, top five quarterback left in him. And for that year, you have surrounded him with the same weapons you did last year, which is Devontae Adams and nobody else. And they, you see teams like the Arizona Cardinals trade for DeAndre Hopkins. Like, you couldn't have offered the Texans a second round pick for DeAndre Hopkins. You couldn't have given up the farm for Stephon Diggs. You couldn't have you couldn't have signed Emmanuel Sanders to the deal that he got with the Saints. Like, there was ample opportunity this offseason for them to get more weapons for Aaron Rodgers, and management failed. Brian Gutekunst did not do his job this offseason. And the Packers are not going to be a playoff team next year. That's my opinion. They just have not made enough moves, and that defense is not replicable enough, and their schedule, which was weak, is not replicable enough for them to make the playoffs again. I don't think they're a playoff team in 2019 unless they go all out and surround Aaron Rodgers with wide receivers in the draft.
Well, you know, to add on to the schedule, keep in mind that, and again, this isn't the Homer Bears fan, or this isn't the Bears fan we sitting here saying this is the analyst. When you look at the schedule, you also have to factor in that one, they were playing a third place schedule in 2019, and two, they also had like 9-1 score games, right? So there were 9 games last season where they barely squeaked by teams, right? When also you look at it, they're going to be playing a first place schedule in 2020. And then on top of that, I think we need to keep in mind that, like, they're relying – so Devontae Adams is going to be wide receiver one. There's no doubt about it. But they're relying on these younger guys like Alan Lazard, for example, who had his flashes, or Jay Sternberger, the rookie tight end in 2019 that was injured for most of the year. They're relying on these younger pieces to step up. I truly think the strength of the offense last season was not Aaron Rodgers at all. He was kind of just like the point guard, right? The real strength was the running game. Can Aaron Jones replicate his 2019 season?
I would argue no. Right? I would argue running backs have a really hard time coming off big seasons, and the stats bear that out. I don't know, you say it. I just think that they are not a playoff team right now. Like, the way they are constructed, they have not done enough. And maybe they – They probably are, just because the playoff rules are so weak at this point. But to me, if you're the seventh best team in your conference, even if you, quote, make the playoffs, this is a team that will get stomped in the first round of whatever wildcard game they play, because they are just not talented enough. And frankly, I think Matt LaFleur is a good head coach, and I think his offense can work. It is proven that his offense has worked places, but you need more targets than just Davante Adams, and they just don't have that right now.
Right, and you know that's the thing is they, you know, if you go back to and look at, I think it was the Eagles game in Week 4 or 5 where they were playing at Lambeau and the Eagles upset them. That game was basically Rodgers to Adams like a million times over. And I think it was statistically it was Adams' best game of the season. So the thing with Green Bay is they're picking, I think, at 27th or 28th overall, right, in the draft. Somewhere in like the last like 5 or 6 picks because they got to the NFC Championship game. But the point is they're going to have to find someone, right? And you also factor in they lost Brian Bulaga too this offseason, the guy who for so many years had protected Aaron Rodgers, right? So there's tons of changes. I don't think Bulaga's an upgrade from Ricky Wagner, who they signed because the Detroit Lions cut him. Regarding Christian Kirksey, I'm not really going to say he's a true game changer at the middle linebacker position, because we've seen so many players that are like good on one team and then it's like they go to a new scheme and they just like completely flame out. So like Gutekunst, he had an opportunity to make his team better, but he just was not aggressive enough, and he's going to rely on like the draft this year to really build the Packers for the future. So right now I think what Green Bay is doing is they're trying to do two different things. They're trying to compete with Aaron Rodgers, but then they're also trying to figure out is how do we set this how do we set this team up post Aaron Rodgers? Because Rodgers is like much older and he's taken a bigger beating the last couple of years than most people think.
Yeah, I completely agree. And they lost Brian Bulaga this offseason to the Chargers. So and despite his injuries throughout his career, he has been one of the best tackles in the league. And losing him definitely hurts them at that position as well. Well, you said, thank you very much for joining us. We are out of time for today. But if there's anything you'd like to plug, I'd love to give you a shot to do that. I know you're working with the Brawl Network right now. I'd love to get on one of their shows if they ever need somebody. And it's been a great time talking with you.
So we'll have to get you on, because I work with, because the New York Giants are always my second team, because I kind of grew up, lived in the New York area for 8 years, right? So we record every Tuesday nights at 9 Eastern, so you're more than welcome to jump on there and talk NFL draft scenarios with us, just follow me on Twitter at @HussainKosho, guys, and then DMs are always open, so you can come at me with anything you feel like I said was super controversial. But thanks as always for having me on.
Absolutely. We will be back tomorrow. It is going to be Chris Kastan week. Me and him are going to see if we can survive each other for 5 straight days. We will see you then. Peace out, folks. Follow us on Twitter at @EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want to shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.